Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and this is another week of American Tennis. And I wanted to let you know that you are Tennis Network. Thank you, Coach Jason Haynes, for the multiple years. And now we coach tennis. J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis will be helping us with the UR Tennis Network, and we will have new shows each week as well as my show. You always, 4 years now, Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program, John Denise's Florida tennis program, J.P. Weber with We Coach Tennis and his insights there, and some others to come, folks. So the UR Tennis Network will be growing and expanding. And we just thank you for tuning in to the American Tennis Program. I'm in my fourth year now, and I call my program American Tennis because I like to talk about what's going on in the United States of America with the growth of tennis, junior tennis, college tennis, not so much in the professional ranks. We do a few things here and there, but basically we're into the foundation, the fundamental parts of the game of tennis in our country. Folks, I'm Coach Chuck Griese, and I'm excited to be in my fourth year. I wanted to remind you always that the purpose of American Tennis is to give a forum for you to stand up and to speak out and to say those things that you would like to say. And each and every week, and we always just say, you know, address issues, not people. And if you can stay professional, daggone it, you can say pretty much anything you want to say. And that's the beautiful thing about the UR Tennis Network and what we're trying to do here. I always quote Edmund Burke, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. I love that because it really is everything that you don't like. You hear the complaining all the time, USTA this and the ITA this and these people are doing this. And we're very much, I agree that these big organizations are trying to put every part of tennis under their umbrellas, and that's how bureaucracies grow and bureaucracies function. But the people in these organizations, mostly good and very noble people doing a great job for tennis, but the idea of just trying to put things under the umbrella. If you want to complain, daggone it, complain. You know, we need, that's what makes America great, is that you can say what you want to say, and we hope that American tennis will always be a program and a format that you can say what you want to say. But that's pretty much it. I looked, for the last 5 or 6 weeks, I've been doing instructional series on player development, and today we will have a program as well on player development as soon as our season is over, that I've been going through, and the multiple battles of recruiting and all that you have to do with coaching, that pretty much, you know, you ever heard the saying that, you know, you're quart low and there's no filling station in town. You know, the battery gets to the place where it's just about not rechargeable. But we will start having some top guests on once again and get some more insights other than mine. But I've got a whole list of things and subjects that I love to talk about. And today's no different. I want to talk about the changing pressures of high-performance tennis. And this is the reason why this is front and center for me, is that I coach, and I've coached hundreds and thousands, really, of players if you put in my camps that I've done over the years. But I'm a coach and I'm a teacher, and parents and players always are dumbfounded and befuddled and confused, because they will be rocking around along pretty well, getting their games down, getting their competitive levels where they want them to be. And what happens almost all the time is that they hit roadblocks, or they hit the place where they just cannot perform to the level that they want to perform. There's a lot of slumps in this game. This game is incredibly hard. You really have to have the stomach to lose, and you have to have the stomach to travel, because you have to travel a lot. You've got to go seek out the competition. I mean, it's pretty cool. My son's in baseball, and he's getting tons of competition right now with the game of baseball, where just where we're located. We don't have to travel. And he starts to do the travel ball. We've got to travel a little bit more, and you play better teams, you play things. But it's not like tennis. The double-edged swords of tennis is the fact that, yeah, it's great that you get to travel all over the country, all over the world sometime to play, but my golly, is it tough on your pocketbook. And it's extremely hard if you don't have the money to go play where you need to play, but you do need to seek out the competition. I live in the state of South Carolina, and the state of South Carolina is known as the number one state in America for golf, for the sport of golf. We have more golf courses here, I think, per capita than any other state in the country. So golfers are here because the courses are here, and the players play against the course to master that. But could you imagine match play? If you had to only progress in golf through match play, you'd have to get to the place where you could compete against another golfer head-to-head. That would be the only way that you could advance. Well, that changed the whole dynamic right away. You'd have to go wherever the players are. Well, in tennis, that's what you have to do. So the double-edged sword is, yeah, you do get to travel the world. You do get to meet a lot of different people. You do get to do a lot of fantastic things that just elevate the education and the travel knowledge of a person, the broad part of the person who gets to travel. However, the downside, if you don't have the money to do that, it's tough to get better. So that's always been the dilemma, you know, of tennis players, that what happens, what do you do when you start to get good? And you have to have the stomach to travel. If you don't like traveling, it's a tough sport. You have to have the stomach to lose, because you could be flying along pretty well, but losing is just what happens to, in a 32 draw, 31 of the players, 128 draw, 127 of them lose, and you've got to have the stomach to lose. So there's got to be victories in your losing. We always say never let wins go to your head, never let losses go to your heart. Hopefully you can let wins go to your heart for confidence, losses go to your head for learning. But you've got to make victories out of the losses that you have to take. It's just part of the deal. You've got to take losses. So anyhow, I want to try to put a little method to the madness of the competition of tennis here in our program today. And my name of program is The Changing Pressures of High Performance Tennis. And we're going to talk about those just in a second when we get back from the commercial here. Thank you.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I would ask you to go to ChuckCreasy.net for my writings, for my books, for my videos, and the other things about Total Tennis Training, my program that I've had for, oh gosh, now 40 years. But thanks very much if you could go to ChuckCreasy.net and keep up with some cutting-edge developments in tennis. But also, folks, as you know, a lot of my opinions and some of those things that you might not have looked at as deeply, and I hope that this is a great resource for you in the years to come. Go to ChuckCreasy.net. This is Coach Chuck Creasy and Making Tennis Players in America. And folks, we've got a lot of great things going on out there, and we want to encourage everybody to work together, and let's get some top players out there on the world competition again. But we're talking about the changing pressures of high performance tennis, and let's go back here and talk about just a youngster. It could be a team, an individual player, a program. But when talked, the most important thing, the first thing to do is to get the culture or the behavior of the program, of the youngster, of the player right. And this has to happen, first of all. Most people think, hey, I'm going to become a good player and then I'll do the right thing. Hey, once I start getting the wins, once I start getting my ranking up, then I'm going to be doing it. Oh, once I start making money, I will then be a pro. No, the cart before the horse type of deal. Which comes first, the behavior or the feelings? Or the feelings are the behavior, the action. And it always comes down to this. The culture or the behavior of the program has to be that of a championship program, has to be that of a championship tennis player. And the analogy always is you can go to school every day of your life and never be a student. You can play music every day of your life, never be a musician. You can play 10 hours of tennis a day, never be a tennis player. You can be on the pro tour and not be a pro. You don't have to be on the pro tour, and you can be a pro by your behavior. The culture is the most important thing. Then it becomes an issue, number two, of how you compete. It's not just about being a hard trier. It's not just about I'm going to do my best. Oh, I did my best. Well, no, you have to do your best. That's not a big bonus, a big plus mark if you are just saying, oh, I'm a hard tryer, do my best. No, that's expected. If you don't do your best, there's no way to win in tennis. It's just too hard. You can only go so far without with just your strokes. It's your head, your heart, and your legs that all have to be invested. If you do the head, heart, and legs, then the strokes will come along and be effective. Now, sure, your race car could be bigger than the next guy's. Your strokes could be better than the next player's. But almost always it runs the course of maxing out. Your technical skills max out. You have to have your head, heart, and legs. I have a sign in my office here. Right now I'm looking at it. It says, take away their legs, beat their head, break their heart, and then their game will fall. That is the goal. Now, that's very hard to do. When a player starts losing, they miss balls, they check out, they lose the emotional edge that you have to have completely. Whenever you compete, I whether we're outmatched or not, I try to talk to my players about the emotional battle. We have to win that. And it's not about a game of intimidation. It's not about a game of bowling. It's not about a game of being the loudest person on the court. Or it's about fighting in the right way. Your head, heart, and legs must be completely engaged. But having the head, heart, and legs completely engaged, you have to look internally. You have to look at yourself. You have to do the right things. And it's just the hardest thing in the world to get that mastered. But this, yeah, sure, the strokes are important. The strokes are very, very much needed. Believe me, better strokes make better players. Well, it makes a better player's level of competition. But when you're competing against a tournament of 64 players, you wouldn't be in that level of competition unless you were in that level of competition. So you get the culture right and the behavior right, then you have to learn to compete in the right way. I say that first because the step right after learning to compete in the right way is learning how to lose in the right way. I mean, it's easy to go on the court and say, I'm a hard trier. But it is very, very hard to go on the court and to keep the balls that you know how to keep in the court. You keep them in the court. You fight hard with your head, your heart, and your legs. And then you take a whipping sometimes. Wow. And it's very, very hard not to make excuses. It's very, very hard to really just say, you know, I took a whipping. My game is not good enough yet. I kept my head, heart, and legs invested. But it wasn't good enough. The other player was better than me today. And it's extremely hard to lose in the right way. Most of the time, this is a game of dominance or a high pecking order. The higher pecking order usually wins in tennis. And the reason why is the subtleties on the court of the favorite player. First of all, the favorite believes they are the constant, you are the variable. The underdog believes that they're the variable, you are the constant. The critical thing also is the favorite player sees the other person's, the underdog's mistakes and sees their own good shots. Or when they hit bad shots, they know that it's just a matter of time until their good play comes around the bend. The underdog looks at the favorite's good shot and their own bad shots. And how do you switch this around? And I had a player start playing very, very well recently, just took a big jump. And the obvious sentence that he says is, Coach, I got a hold of my confidence. Well, that's exactly what it is. Some players say, I got in this zone. Well, what is that zone? It's a comfort level where they know I am the constant, my opponent's the variable. And I always say to players about confidence, that you know that you know that you know that you've got an answer at the end of the day. At the end of the day, well, you know, that's a saying out there now, at the end of the day. Really, it just means that, look, this might be a long battle, a short battle, but I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay at the end of this tennis day. And so, but before you have that, you have to learn how to lose the right way. And it doesn't just mean being a good sport. It means, yeah, you've got to be a good sport, but you've got to go through the pain of losing. If you dare and if you care, pressure and pain will be there. Pressure will be there, but the pain will be there also when you lose. And it's just part of the deal. And I refer to the tennis gods often. There are no tennis gods, but it just sort of allows you to remember that you are a smaller person than the game of tennis. The tennis has its own way of doing things, and you are just an actor in the greater stage of this game of tennis. You do not have control over the game of tennis. So the tennis gods have their way, and the tennis gods will not allow you to go forward until you have suffered enough and do the right things on the court. You have no control over winning or losing. You only have control over having a winning behavior and competing in the right way. And guess what? Sometimes you'll lose after that, and sometimes that will hurt. And it's a terrible pain, but you have to go through it. And about 3 weeks ago, I guess I'm glad I'm not a drinking man, or I can't drink very much, because, I was in such pain after a doubleheader loss. And it's one of those where you shoulda, coulda, woulda won, but you didn't. You shoulda, coulda, woulda, but didn't. And it hurt so bad, I got caught in traffic going home. It took about an hour and a half, and I was just laying on that horn. I wanted an exit to get off somewhere where I could sit down and lick my wounds and just feel better. And was there? And it's the kind of thing you see when a person gets depressed, they go out to hang out at a bar or something. But I'm lucky. I don't have the, as you get older, it's harder and harder to just go run and exercise. Listen, folks, that's why as a coach, when your players do lose, tell them to go out and take a run, turn their bad pain into good pain. That's why you work out after you lose. It's never for punishment. It's just turn the bad pain into good pain. But the pain was so bad this day on the way home, I couldn't find an exit. Finally, I got off at my home exit. It took about an hour and a half to do a 30-minute drive. And I pulled right into that Wendy's that was right on the right side of the road. Not only did I get a number one combo, I got two number one combos, and I got not a water, not a health drink, not even the doggone green tea that they have now with so much sugar. I got a Diet Coke. Okay, all right. I guess I could have got a milkshake and a regular Coke if I'd wanted to really. But I stuffed that old food down. And then, oh, my golly, afterwards, I feel terrible, not just physically but mentally. I said, what am I doing here? You know, I'm just trying to do anything to get some type of comfort. And really, I think the only way of curing the pain of a loss is to come up with a plan of doing the next right thing. You do the next right thing. Make a plan. That evening, I did take a walk, and that helped me a lot better. I would have taken my dog that day, but things were so bad that my own dog was barking at me when I came home. So I didn't even take a walk with the dog. I just went out and took a walk, started thinking, made a plan for practice the next day, and once I did the next right thing, things got better. And then I had a plan. And then I think our team made a jump because I made some adjustments. And that's the only way to go about losing, and losing in the right way. The minute that you feel sorry for yourself, the minute that you make excuses, the minute that you do the wrong things when you lose, avoid the pain. And again, it's the quality of the pain much more than the quantity of the pain. The quantity, you don't have to stare and lay in bed and stare at the ceiling for 3 days and wallow in your own self-pity. But the quality of the pain, just realize I don't like the way this feels, and let's get better. I have a saying, I said, don't get mad, get better. And that's about the only way to do that. If you don't do that, you miss a great opportunity, and actually you stop your progression of having the right behavior, culture, competing the right way. Then you got to learn to lose the right way. Then if you do all the right things losing, guess what? The tennis gods allow you to win. Then you got to learn how to win. And you got to learn how to win at different levels. And then you have to learn win with different pressures. And then finally, you learn how to win championships. But I'm going to go a little deeper here about learning how to win at different levels. And that's where this it really comes in handy to realize that the game of tennis, it's not like any other game. You know, it's interesting to watch golfers. They try to be perfect. And there's a great book, Bob Rotello, the sports psychologist, had a book out called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. But you would think that golfers, the way they dress, the way they walk, the way they putt, all their routines, their rituals, everything, they try to get it perfect. But they're playing against the golf course. They're playing against themselves. But it's not like tennis where every time you're playing against somebody else. Yeah, that's a dynamic, playing against somebody else in golf. But tennis is so hard because every player is different. Every player plays different the next time you play him as well. There's no situation that is static. Every situation is moving. Every situation is dynamic, and it's changing. It's ever, ever changing. So as a player, and if you honor the game and you realize it's honoring you and you're in a battle, you realize that you're like in a – the analogy I use a lot is that as a player, you are in a tippy canoe and you're put into a river and you have no idea what the river has for you. Even if you have paddled on that river before, maybe there was a big rain the night before, it's changed the whole dynamic of the rocks and the rapids and the smooth part. You don't have any control over that river, that tennis match. You have no control over it. So what you do is you have your one paddle and you try to navigate the river. And it's got rocks. It's got hidden rocks. It's got smooth places where you just say, hey, this is really, really going well. Everything's working out well. Whoa, wait a minute. Here comes some rapids. I'm all of a sudden, wait a minute, I was up 40 love. Now I lost that game, and now I'm down a break. How did that happen all in a period of 10 minutes? You have rapids and a waterfall and then hidden rocks, and you have all kinds of crisis management situations that you have to deal with. So tennis is definitely not a game of perfect. If golf is not a game of perfect, tennis absolutely is not. Everything changes. Everything changes every week, and it changes without notice, and it changes without rhyme or reason. Sometimes it makes no sense. It's the craziest game in the world. But if you recognize it as such and the greatness of this game, you are going to be forever mesmerized, flabbergasted, enticed. What adjective could you use to describe the depth of the game of tennis? And I'm only going to talk 15 seconds here about no ad scoring, but why in the world would we ever dumb down such a fantastic game that is based on so many multiple deep facets because of the scoring system? It is just beautiful that you have to win. You have to learn how to win by two and group points three in a row. And you have to learn how to carry the lead. And you have to cause separation. And there's no celebration till separation. You must learn how to walk as the leader. You have to. The scoring system in NOAD is such a bastardization of this game. It is horrible. And anyone who cannot see this does not understand the game of tennis. I do not care what they have won in tennis. I do not care if they're a world champion. If they do not see the depth of the game of tennis and understand what a bastardization of no-ad score, what that no-ad scoring is, or a 10-point tiebreaker for the third set, they do not understand the game, nor do they love the game enough. And that is absolutely the truth. This game is 30 miles deep, and you only touch the surface if you think it's just about winning or losing. This game is the most fantastic thing ever developed. Well, was that 15 seconds? I think it was almost 15 minutes, but I think you all know how I feel about the no-ad scoring or the abbreviated scoring systems that our organizations are force-feeding us, force-feeding, and just, it's so harmful. And the sad thing is that they don't even see their folly. They do not even see their folly that they will destroy one of the greatest games in the world. Shameful. Shameful to say the least. The pressure changes in every situation, even if you played the same person before. It's like being in that river. You've been down the river in a canoe 15 times, but it's always different, always challenging. You might be familiar with the situation, but every match is different. Every river is different. I'm going to hone in on 8 different situations, and then as we don't have time to completely go through this today, we're going to continue this next week. But first of all, you need to evaluate the situation that you face coming into the match. Are you the favorite? Are you the underdog? Is it an even matchup? Have you played the person before and won? Have you played the person before and lost? Maybe you've never played them and you're favored. Maybe you've never played them, they're favored. Maybe it's an even matchup and you never met. There's so many. Maybe you're playing at their home courts. Maybe you're playing at yours. And there are just so many different situations that allow a person's tennis player's tennis level to fluctuate. But the first thing, you must acknowledge the situation. And that's what I want to stress upon you. At first, we'll start talking about this. But again, I want to go back and say that being the favorite is paramount in tennis in your own mind. Usually underdogs don't win in tennis. Being the favorite allows you to think of yourself as the constant. The opponent is the variable. Being the favorite allows you to focus on the other side of the court during competition. Even if you focus on your side of the court in practices, you focus on the other person's side in competition if you're the favorite. If you're not the favorite, if you're the underdog, you usually focus on your side of the court. You're always self-coaching, and you're not seeing the whole deal. You're always, think about this. If you play as the underdog and you're always self-coaching and worrying about your own game, it's like being in that canoe, and you're always worried about, is the canoe going to spring a leak here? Wait a minute, I've got to fix that little thing here. Well, wait a minute, my handle is not working right here. And what happens? You end up flipping the canoe. Same thing in tennis. If you're always worried about my forehand doesn't feel right, my backhand doesn't feel right, this isn't going well, that's not going well. In your self-coaching, folks, you're going to lose. You're going to flip that canoe. You're going to flip it. It's very interesting that question always comes up in a large group. And I heard this group. I heard the great Mats Wielander speak. He was at the training center where I used to work, and he was doing a seminar. One of the youngsters, and they always asked this, what do you do when you're not playing well? He said, I only had 2 matches in my life that were big matches that I could ever remember just playing physically really well. And he said, by the way, I lost one of them. He said, most of the time you're just trying to work the situation, learn from. He called that playing mini matches when he was playing. You play mini matches all along the way, understanding what the person can do, what they can't do. hoping your game is a constant and the other person's game can be a variable. And so those are great words of wisdom from a great, great player, one of the greatest players of all time. And actually, he was a tennis player, not just a ball striker. He was a tennis player. He played the game. And some of his quotes were just brilliant. I learned some brilliant things by just listening about the many matches or the many competitions that you play all along the way so that you know how to play at the end, because this is a game that you have to play well at the end. But and the other thing, turning bad pain into good pain. Another one of his quotes was, the putting on practice day, you think about your side of the court. On game day, you think about the other person's side of the court. And the other part of it it's not the length of the pain, it's the quality of the pain. It's not the quantity of the pain, he said, it's the quality of the pain that makes a player change. Those are all brilliant diamonds from a great, great player. But first of all, evaluate the situation that you have coming into the match and the pressure that you have in each of those roles. Once you evaluate it, you look at the river, you're getting ready to put your canoe in the river, you look at it, you say, whoop, here's the situation. It looks like I got rapids down there. Looks like I could have a waterfall. Hey, I got some smooth over there. Wait a minute, how's my canoe today? Oh, dang, the paddle. I only got half a paddle, and it's half cracked. Okay, I got to figure this one out. Okay, I got to do that. There's no avoiding getting into the river. You have to still get into the river. But the deal is that evaluate the situation before you do get into the river. Folks, and you know, as we have a short program today, I wanted to tell you that I'm going to come back and pick up next week on evaluating the situation you have to face and those different roles that you have in the pressures that you face in the game of tennis and match play. And I want to tell you also, we'll be going back to a full hour program next week, Wednesday, every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Please come and listen to American Tennis. And thanks to We Coach Tennis program and the UR Tennis Network, J.P. Weber. Thank you for allowing us on your network, and we're excited to keep it rolling this year, folks. This is Coach Chuck Green.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Made in America. Made in America.
And this goes to Chuck Creasy, reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. God bless you all. We'll see you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.